We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. From Illinois Public Media, this is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 FM 90.9 HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, Computers in You, Peter Kimball is our guest this afternoon. He's with the Fast 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Listeners, I welcome your questions about computers for Peter Kimball. You can join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. Peter, welcome back. Good to see you.
It's good to be back.
So, what should we begin with today?
Well,
15th of March.
15th, the Ides of March. Avoid the forum. Avoid senators or groups of people wearing togas. But in terms of be wearing, I suppose we could talk a little bit about some of the newest security threats that are out there. There were something like 26 million varieties of various malicious software that were cataloged last year alone. That's a lot. Now, many of those are the same kinds of things, just slight variations, but people need to be on their guard still. So beware the Ides of March. Beware of little pop-ups that appear on your screen saying, we've detected you're infected. Click here to fix it, because often what you click to fix is actually part of the problem.
Okay.
So,
well, you want to take a moment here to review what we should be in terms of virus protection and keeping our machines clean, what we
well,
might want
to
do.
Sure. By far, and it's something that listeners have heard many times because we bring it up periodically, up-to-date antivirus software is certainly essential, and it's becoming more important, not just for Windows users. Sometimes Mac users and users of other operating systems, although there aren't as many Unix or Linux users out there, may feel, well, it's a Windows problem. I don't have to worry about it because my computer system doesn't get viruses. As more and more people start using those alternative to Windows machines, there is going to be more and more viruses and other malicious software targeted towards them. It's already showing up. And the other problem is that many of the more recent attacks come to third-party software applications such as Adobe Flash or Adobe Acrobat documents, which are installed on machines, whether they're running the Mac OS or Windows. So step one, of course, have an actively subscribed to antivirus program, because an antivirus program that you might have installed last month, if it's not updating regularly, is not very useful, because most of the effective software attacks are fairly recent. In fact, there are even a category of so-called zero-day attacks. There is a problem that is being exploited when it is first discovered that it's a problem. So there may not be any patches. Some of the antivirus software can actually detect suspicious kinds of activity. It's not 100% guaranteed, but what you don't want to do is to buy a PC, and it probably comes with some kind of antivirus subscription, and then it runs out, and you think, no, do I really want to send them $30 for the next year? Nah, I've got antivirus. Well, you don't really after that point. The other thing is, and this is true on Windows and the Mac and really any operating system, is to make sure that you keep your software updated. That would be if you're logged on as an administrator on either a Mac OS or on a Windows machine, you get the software updates from Apple or the software updates periodically from Microsoft. They have what's been called Patch Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, when they tried to bundle things together. But also, if there's anything more urgent, those will be sent out without waiting for the end of the month. It's possible, and generally this would be the default case, to set those up so they can happen automatically, even in the middle of the night if you're connected via a cable modem or a broadband connection that's on all the time. But don't neglect fixing or updating programs that probably everybody uses. I would imagine that 90-95% of the computer users out there have some version of Adobe Reader or Acrobat Reader. And any version prior to 9.2 has known susceptibilities. A maliciously crafted PDF file, Acrobat document, can cause it to fail in such a way that the software can allow your computer to be taken over.
Okay, so we want to make sure that those are updated.
Yes, Adobe also has a facility in their software that you can have it automatically check for and download updates. The same thing would be true for the Flash Player. Really, almost anything that has fairly wide use, but those are the main ones, the Adobe Acrobat and Flash, plus whatever your operating system is. And that would be the start. That would be the good start. Those are two things, the antivirus software and the regular update of whatever software your computer system is running.
Yeah. Now, I have a MacBook, and I was asking somebody here in the building who knows a lot about computers, and I know virtually nothing. And I was talking with him, and I said, you know, Apple sends me these updates, and you can check which ones you want to update. And he said, you know what, if I were you, Celeste, I'd just go ahead and update them all the recommended ones, even things that you don't use on your computer. Because he said that some of these other things can act as a backdoor for getting in. And so I thought, oh, okay.
That's certainly true. If you never use, if you're on the Apple, on the Mac, and you never use iTunes, well, which is not too likely because almost everybody uses at least a little bit, the iTunes update you might not think is that critical. We have a lab where we have iTunes installed because occasionally we deal with those files. One update that I have not chosen to include is the updating the iTunes phone dialer because we don't have that kind of a connection and we don't go out. But it wouldn't hurt to download it. I've just never really bothered to do so. Absolutely, you want to make sure that anything that indicates it is a security update is checked. Mm-hmm. But just selecting them all, the good news is that Apple and on the Windows side, Microsoft, would not be recommending or making those available for download if they weren't addressing some known problem or some lack of functionality. So the safest position would be to say, yes, go ahead and just download all of this stuff.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Peter Kimball. He's with the FAST 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. Listeners, I welcome your questions about computers for Peter Kimball this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We've got a listener waiting to talk with us. Let's take this call on line one. Hello.
Hello?
Hi there. Go ahead.
Okay. I have bought a notepad, one of the little computers, the little notepad notebook thing, and my daughter got on there and signed on to instant messaging from MSN, and I cannot get that to stop coming up. How do I turn that all the way off or disable or what?
So this is a notepad. Or a netbook or a notepad, a small computer running the Microsoft operating system?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you've got a couple of options. One is you can actually remove it entirely. And I haven't done this lately with MSN. But if you're logged on as an administrator and you go to the Start button or the Windows button in the lower left-hand corner of the taskbar and choose under the Settings Control Panel. And under Control Panel, you will see one of the options. Now, there are a number of ways of seeing this, but what you want to do, and if you don't find it, you can do a little search in there for Add or Remove Programs.
Yes.
Once you've chosen Add or Remove Programs, it will build a list of what's installed, and you should see MSN Instant Messenger listed there. And you can, if you choose, then completely remove it from the system. It'll be as if it were never installed.
Excellent. That's what I want to do. It's not needed, and I worry about it.
Then that's the way to eliminate it entirely. I'll just mention, just to be complete, you can also, once it's started up, you will be able to change the preferences so that it will not automatically launch or begin whenever Windows starts. It'll be there and somebody would be able to start it, but it won't start automatically. But that is not nearly as complete and ultimate the solution as just going to the Add Remove Programs and saying get rid of it entirely.
That's what I'm after. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Very welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener waiting on line two. Hello.
Hi. This question is going to expose my ignorance big time, but I just don't understand why all the different things like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Buzz and on and on and on and on. Why isn't just email good enough?
Well, that's a wide open question. Briefly, email requires that somebody actually have a separate email account, that they download the email, that they take a look at it. There are several steps involved. There are things that you can do on Facebook and Twitter that go beyond just sending email to one particular person. For example, in Facebook, which is arguably perhaps the most popular of the ones you mentioned, you can, by identifying a number of people as friends, then without need to go download email, go and look at their latest postings, their latest news. I've got a Facebook account that I don't use very often, but I know a number of people who now spend probably, half an hour, 45 minutes a day in Facebook, getting all kinds of neat little details about their other friends' activities and children's news and such. So it's just a bit more immediate and is not on a one-to-one basis where somebody actually has to specifically say, I'm going to send this email to X, Y, and Z. So it's a more immediate sort of a social, that's why they're called social networking sites. You don't have to, it's like having a group conversation with a group of friends rather than sticking something in a letter and mailing it to somebody.
Okay.
And Twitter, if you're out there in the world, you can communicate with the people who follow you or you follow them, and you can pull a get-together together.
That's right.
That's one of the ways you can use it.
Sometimes referred to as flash mobs. You can say, hey, let's everybody get together at such and such a place, and they just sort of convene. As long as we're on this Ides of March theme and things to be aware of, I will point out, and as we have in the past, that one of the downsides of this, if it's used incautiously of things like Facebook, if somebody says, on Facebook, I'm having a wonderful time on vacation here in the mountains, which if you've also had a lot of postings about the fact that you live in Champaign-Urbana, tells people that you're not at home. And there was a website that got some controversy for a while that was trying to point this out that was called robmyhouse.com, and it was just pointing out how all the people who were posting, we're looking forward, we're going to be away for 2 weeks in the mountains. That's the kind of thing that you would probably want to put on these social networking sites after your return.
Well, what about LinkedIn? I've got, I believe, three, maybe four people have asked me to join that, and I have no idea what it is or why I should join it?
LinkedIn is more, it's the same kind of a site, but it's more oriented towards people who are wanting to do networking in the old school way, wanting to, for example, post resumes, wanting to look for various jobs. It seems to me to be much more of a professional in terms of one's occupation sort of network. That's just my take on it. I know a number of people who are there because you tend to list your resume and various other kinds of things there. So that's my impression. It's not nearly quite the chatty social sort of medium that either Facebook or Twitter are.
And then there's Buzz. I clicked on that to discover that one person is following me, and it says I'm following six people, two of whom are my grandsons. I have no idea what they're talking about.
You know, I have not used Buzz, but it's the same kind of idea. Following simply means that you will get anything that they post, you will see the next time you log on, and vice versa.
But I don't.
Well, somewhere, either they're not posting or you're not quite going to the right page on Buzz. I can't tell you that much about it because I've not used it.
Well,
but that's the whole idea. It's to facilitate easy communication. If somebody posts, lots of people can see what's going on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Sometimes things change so rapidly, you know, you caught like...
Yeah, is this a time to... No, we won't talk about how we may accept tweets on Twitter in terms of questions
coming,
at some
point. At some point, I think, to WILL. It'll be Focus. It won't be the Afternoon Magazine. But yeah, we're talking about tweeting.
Oh boy!
So there you have it. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and the Afternoon Magazine will be here in the 1 o'clock hour through the end of this month, actually April 1st and 2nd, and then coming in the first full week in April, Terry Gross will be here. But I will tell you, listeners, fans of Computers in You, and some of the other regular programs that we do on the Afternoon Magazine, we're talking about moving them to Focus, and we haven't quite figured out when and how and all that kind of thing. But don't fear. Peter Kimball will probably show up in the morning.
I can be a morning person.
Okay, very good. Anyway, Peter Kimball is with us this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine to talk about computers. He's with the Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now, a listener on line three. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm one of those who has allowed the virus software to lapse, and I'm not sure which ones are good ones to have as a private user at home. Is there anything you can recommend? I'm not sure you're allowed to do that on air, but I've used Norton 360 or something like that, but I know there are so many others that it confuses. So if you could mention a few that are good, it will help me.
Well, there are several. And when you're looking at whatever company, whatever antivirus software vendor you're looking at, you had mentioned the Norton 360, which is actually a combination of protective software. There's antivirus, there's a firewall in there, there's various other components that try to check your email and do all sorts of other things for you. And most of the major vendors have these sort of multi-layered protection products. There are several out there. Norton is one, McAfee is another. There is one called Viper, V-I-P-R-E, which is from Sunbelt Software. What I would do is, from any of the major vendors, do a Google search for a comparison, such as Norton versus McAfee would be a M-C-A-F-E-E, I think. But you'd find it because Google will correct your spelling on that. If you do that kind of a search, something versus something else, you'll get all sorts of various hits in Google. And some of them may well rate the software in a fairly objective manner. You might also go to the CNET, that's CNET.com site, which is from publishers of various computer magazines. And they frequently do kind of a consultation Consumer Reports review of software, including certainly antivirus software, and you would be able to read about the pros and the cons. Some things to be aware of, in addition to the fact that there is, of course, a cost involved with these, is how much of a load do they put on your system? If you've got an older system, sometimes when you're loading up files, some of the antivirus products can slow things down noticeably. What you do not want to do is install more than one of them, because then they just get in each other's way.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome.
But
thanks.
The important thing is, by all means, even if you generally don't visit sites that might be suspicious, well-known sites can sometimes be hacked and temporarily install malicious software. So you want to waste no time at all in getting that software updated.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I have two problems that I want to discuss, and I think they may be related, but I'm not sure. I have a router that has the wireless on it, and the router is the D-Link DI-524, and it's G802.11g 2.4 gigahertz, and the wireless sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. It's from my I have a desktop computer that's plugged directly into the router, and that always works. That's through the wire. That always works. But the wireless that I use for my laptop computer sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. It's about three walls that it has to go through to get the signal path. And I think it probably goes sort of through a bed with an inner spring mattress along the way. But what I don't understand is why it sometimes works and sometimes doesn't.
Well, there could be a number of factors. Among them, the most common is that at that particular kind of wireless connection you've got, what's called the 802.11g, and running at 2.5 gigahertz, that happens to be the same radio frequency or very close to it that some wireless cordless phones use, and it's very close to the frequency of microwaves in a microwave oven. So either of those, if they were nearby and in use, could interfere. Probably more common is if you've got any neighbors who are using a wireless router, there could be interference. These wireless routers can operate on any of 11 different channels, and if there are two that are operating on the same channel in relatively close proximity, it's going to result in all kinds of slowdowns, errors, maybe even dropped connections. You can test that out, or maybe not test it, but make a change and see if it does any good. If you actually, on your machine that is wired into the router, there is a web address that you can type in. It's in the form of a number, 192.168.something or other. You'll find that in the documentation that came with the D-Link.
Okay.
When you do that, you'll be prompted for a password. Basically, it's a little web server that's built into the wireless router that allows you to change things such as what channel it operates on,
mm-hmm.
And add security and such. Basically, even though I said there were 11 channels, there are only three that don't overlap. So take a look. It's probably defaulted to channel 11. Might be channel 6.
Okay, so I should try to change the channel
right.
in?
Right, and the channels that you want to try to change to, because others won't, would be either channels 1 or 6 or 11.
Okay.
Those are the three that don't overlap each other.
Okay. The other problem that I said might be related to this is that sometimes the laptop simply, it loads the page, but then as soon as it's loaded, it just disappears from the screen. The screen just goes gray. It still has the bezel around it with all the Firefox, but all the stuff that you use. In fact, what I do when that happens is to reload it. But sometimes I may have to reload it four or five times before it stays up.
And this is so basically, it's the web page display itself within the Firefox window.
Right.
I believe that Firefox will do that when it's waiting for something. What you might try doing, you probably also have and you could try this. It may not help. is try loading that same page at that time with Internet Explorer, if you've got Internet Explorer still installed on your system. It could indeed be related to the fact that it's gotten the page, but it is now expecting something else from the web server. It's not getting it. It's not able to communicate, and so it's kind of going into that grayed out mode while waiting. The best way of trying to see exactly why that is working, why it's working that way, would be to say something, do a search, something like, gray screen Firefox. That's a test. That's something that several people have done before. Gray screen in Firefox, and it locks up. Without reading through all of this, it could be an add-on in Firefox. Basically, type to see some of the things that can happen. Go into Google when the system is working and just type a search phrase, gray screen in Firefox.
Now, I should tell you that the desktop uses Windows XP and the laptop uses Windows Vista. I don't know whether that has anything to do with this or not.
It could, not directly, but certainly Vista handles the lack of communication in a slightly different way.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen Windows and Vista go gray when they're waiting for something to happen, kind of as an indication that you can't click on that successfully. The program in that window was busy doing something else or waiting for something else and was written in such a way that it can't respond to you, and for that reason it's gone gray. Vista's way of saying, I'm not getting a response from this program.
Okay.
So, but yeah. It could indeed be related to communications issues. But I would also see if there's anything else. It could have been some add-ons that are there in Firefox that are not behaving properly, that are only triggered by some websites. Although I'm going to guess from what you say that it's not consistent. It's not that some websites always work and other ones frequently fail. It happens randomly across.
Yeah, it kind of happens randomly, although there are some websites that are worse than others.
Well, that indicates that it may well be an add-on or a bit of software that particular website is using that the others don't.
So
that would be another way to investigate.
Okay. And I'm sorry, what were the channels that I should try, the new channels for the...
1, 6, and 11. The other ones overlap one another, so it's not going to do that much good.
Okay. All right, Greg, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
And next we take a call from a listener on line 2. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, all right. Excuse me. I had a quick question that's kind of a compare and contrast. I'm savvy enough with computers to be dangerous. I've gone so far as FDISKing and reformatting computers and reinstalling stuff. I have a Dell laptop that is giving me fits from day one. And here's my question that comes back to the compare and contrast. I bought it right when they switched over from installing XP to installing Vista and everything. And all of the updates and service packs have only further discombobulated this computer. It is just a mess since day one. I'm about ready to give up on it, but before I do, I was going to kind of try one more thing. I had tried to do a reinstall on Vista, and I found a known problem with Dell and Vista is that it ceases to reinstall. You just kind of time out, and you can stare at it for 12 hours, and it won't do anything. I have talked to a friend, and I'm just about ready to try one of three things. EasyPath, I'm going to sell it. The next step up is I'm going to just try to blanket and get Windows 7. And the last one, which is kind of intriguing because I haven't done it before, and I have a couple of other computers, so it wouldn't be in the way of using any of them, is to try Linux. And a few of my friends who are, computer science PhDs have kind of giggled when I say I'm going to try Linux. Their suggestion is to sell the PC and go Mac. But I was curious about what your feelings are about, time and money investment probably being the easiest route to say, you're never going to get this probably right. Vista has known problems from the very beginning. Or go ahead, give it a shot, and try Windows 7. Or, if you're interested, go Linux. And I'm just curious about your opinions for these routes.
Well, if you got this machine about the time that Vista came out, so it's about a 3-year-old machine, 3 or 4 years old, I presume.
Yeah, just shy of 3 years.
So the difficulty you may have with Windows 7, which would be the cleanest route to go, just wiping it all entirely clean. But you'd have to make sure that appropriate drivers are available. The little, if you've done some work, you know what drivers are.
Yeah, a few of my friends have kind of mentioned is that there's just a million little tiny itty-bitty things to make sure they all fit in the right hole.
And one of the things, I'm not sure how successful you'll be trying to check at the Dell website or with Dell support, do they have Win7 drivers for this particular
entirely
thing? You know what? Yes,
yeah.
I sympathize with that.
Yeah, they could certainly improve their customer service.
However, the Windows 7 does do a better job than Vista at recognizing the particular hardware you've got. And yes, there's specialized driver software, even for the CPU and the motherboard itself. You would think that it'd only be for things like printers and monitors and CD-ROMs and stuff. But even running the motherboard and the memory has special drivers.
Yeah.
So that would certainly, if you have access to a copy of Win7, nothing lost trying to install it. And if it doesn't work, you can always wipe it clean. As far as Linux, it does involve more expertise. It's not, even though there are some fairly friendly Linux installs that you can use, it's not designed for the hands-off, just plug-and-go kind of thing that you would have, that your friends using the Macs are using. It's, even though the Mac behind the scenes is actually Unix.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in experimenting with it, and if you can get a reasonably priced copy of Win7, what I'd do is I'd try blowing it all away and just trying Win7, not spend a whole lot of time on the drivers. If that doesn't work and you're inclined to, Linux will certainly run on it, and then you can always sell a thing.
Yeah. I was kind of considering just archiving the hard drive and just trying with the new one, and just, if it didn't work, then go ahead and put the old one back in and just go ahead and sell it as is.
That would also be an excellent route of retreat if you needed to.
Okay, well, thank you very much. You've helped help my decision-making. I really appreciate it.
Well, good luck.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we go to the toll-free line, line 4. Good afternoon. Line 4, hi there.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. I got tuned into the program just a little bit late, so my first question would be, can I replay this? Is there a way to get a podcast or
definitely, absolutely,
hear this program again?
You can do that. You can go to our website, will.illinois.edu, will.illinois.edu, and it'll be very easy to find. Just look for the Afternoon Magazine, and then look for today or this week's programs, and you won't have any problem at all.
Will that be posted?
Well, that's great.
It'll be posted. It'll be posted a little bit later this afternoon.
Great. My second question is: I did catch you talking about the antivirus programs and such, and I have downloaded and installed the Microsoft Security Essentials, which is I read about it in a magazine, and they kind of recommended it. It's a free program, and once you get it, then there's a little icon on your desktop of like a little castle or fortress of the flag, and it updates okay. Now, do you feel, is that a complete program, and I wouldn't have to bother with trying to buy another program? As you said, they may not get along. Just give me your thoughts on that, please.
I'm aware of it. It is promoted as Microsoft as being the protection against viruses, spyware, and so what I would do is it's certainly much better than nothing. I would actually want to, if I were in your situation, take a look at some of the reviews. I would feel fairly safe as long as I have the have it installed properly. And as you say, it is a free download. There is currently no charge for keeping it updated. But I would take a look such as Microsoft Security, Google search for Microsoft Security Essentials Reviews, and see from some of the articles you'll find at places like CNET and others, or PCMag.com, if the reviews have any negative features that would seem to apply to you, keeping in mind such things as the amount of performance hit that it may take, and the well, the cost is certainly not going to be a factor. I don't have anything negative to say about it, but then I don't have I have not looked into detailed comparisons. Certainly, it has seemed to a lot of people in the field for many years that the antivirus protection does make sense to have it come from the same company that provides the operating systems. But, of course, there's a whole industry of Norton and all the rest in doing third-party solutions as well.
Well, yeah, years ago, my wife at work had Norton was security was put on her computer at work, and it was just infuriating, she said, because it just slowed it down so bad that she just couldn't get things done. So that was an experience that she had.
Well, and that is... Mm-hmm. Yes, that is true of several, especially some of the older versions of some of the software products, not just from Norton but from others. They seem to have been written in labs where they have really fast machines and they don't realize that out in the real world it can take a fair amount. I have just taken a look at CNET.com, which is a pretty good site for objective reviews of software, and they are giving the editor's rating for Microsoft Security Essentials. The current version is 4.5 out of 5 stars, which is pretty good, and the average user rating is 4 out of 5 stars. So I would say that that is a pretty good solution based on what I see here.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the program.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Peter, you want to hit the Wildash Talk and see if we've got any email
yes.
here
Let's
coming in?
Let's see if we can find this here.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking today about computers. Our guest is Peter Kimball. He's with the Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. Anything turned up?
Now, there is a suggestion that we take a look at a story about how our armed forces train with simulators.
Well,
review and talk about it yes. sometime. So, you know, yes.
Okay, so what we're looking for, though, is
no, we don't germane. We don't have any of those.
It just
Nothing
shows you
today.
That even at Will-Talk at Illinois, we get spam.
Spam. This is quasi-spam.
Okay. And I wanted to tell you, too, that somebody had called in and I don't know if this – I think this might be helpful. We had that question about the page loading.
Yes.
The listener said maybe something that the listener could do is check activity and check info.
I'd have to look at that.
Yeah.
I don't use Firefox as my regular browser,
yeah.
so
okay.
That I – and mostly because there are some applications, some websites that I go to frequently that require the ActiveX technology, which is a Microsoft Internet Explorer
Let's take another call. A listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Is this Urbana?
Yep.
Okay. Yes, I have a quick question. I didn't hear the beginning of the program, so you may have already covered some of this, but Apple's coming out with the iPad shortly. And I was wondering if it was going to be easy or hard to move information back and forth between it and a PC or a Mac, whether that operating system is going to be so much different that things won't be very compatible.
As you say, the iPad is going to become available. I think for shipping, they're scheduling that for early April. And it is not really designed for running applications such as on, for actual applications. If you want to look at images and such, there are a number of odd, that seem odd decisions that Apple has made. For example, there is no connection, what's called a USB port. So you don't have an easy way of connecting this other than wirelessly using a Wi-Fi network. If you wanted to bring in images from a digital camera and work with that, there's no direct port that you can plug that into, although apparently Apple will be selling a little $30 dongle that you can plug a smart disk camera memory card into. So I don't think that Apple is really positioning this as a substitute for a network or a notebook computer. In fact, Steve Jobs has said that Apple doesn't intend to do a netbook, that the iPad is really more, think of it as more as a much larger iPod Touch and the sorts of things that you can
now,
do with that.
As far as applications, they are going to have clones. They have clones of Microsoft Word, of Excel, and of they have Keynote, which replaces the PC version of I can't remember. Think of it at the moment.
Outlook.
But, I mean, though, I would assume that there'd be some way that you could.
I assume there will be, and again, it'll need to be done wirelessly because or Wi-Fi with the Wi-Fi connection, as my understanding. And yes, those applications basically you'll be able to get those applications from the App Store as folks do with iPhones.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, I can't give you more detail on that, but. It'll be interesting to see how that it's getting mixed reviews in pre-release.
I think this is going to be a really interesting story because I believe that on the first day of pre-orders, Apple did over 120,000 orders. So I think that Apple's got a lot riding on this, and it'll be interesting to see if how they do and if people are happy or unhappy. That's interesting about the photo thing because I remember seeing I clicked on a little Apple ad to watch a preview of it, you know, Apple people talking mm-hmm. about it. And they were talking it up as a great way to do your photos.
Well, it doesn't have a built-in camera. It doesn't have a built-in webcam, although that may
right.
come along in version 2. And
but they don't
yes,
have the...
There's no direct port that you can plug your smart card, your
yet.
Little...
Okay.
SD card into the machine, although apparently there will be the little extra dongle. And if you get the iPad docking station, of course, you'll have all sorts of connections
okay.
with that.
All right,
that's
then
also additional yeah. cost, probably $40 or something.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener on line 2, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. I was wondering, what is the... maximum length for a USB cable? Is there a maximum length?
There probably is a maximum recommended length. There are a couple of different generations of USB. There's the USB 1.0 and 1.1, which are relatively slow. And the USB 2.0, which is what's generally available now. And let me just see if I can find anything. Maximum length of USB cable. So we'll see if we can find a specification. Well, from USB.org, which seems like a good idea. In practice, the length of the cable for full speed, because it will drop down to slower speeds, is, they say, 5 meters.
In other words, almost 20 feet.
Yeah, 17 feet.
Yeah.
That's for a high speed for full-speed devices. If it's a low-speed device, oddly enough, it says the limit is even shorter than that, about 3 meters. And the reason was that it's just really the shielding and the electrical design of the thing from the beginning. You can get all kinds of information about that by just going to the USB.org website, and they're frequently asked questions.
Well, I guess maybe I should do that. It appears that some of the Canon cameras, it's possible to use a USB cable to as a remote cable shutter release.
Hmm.
It takes a bit of doing. I don't know if you're aware of it, but some Linux programmers have hacked the Canon operating system and extended it.
Well, and it could well be that you could get away with a cable longer than that because if you're using it as a remote shutter release, mm-hmm. It doesn't have to send vast streams of data very accurately, as long as it can just get a signal over there that can be read, depending on how they're receiving it with the hack to the OS. It might well work longer than that. But again, 16 feet is a pretty good distance.
It should be distant enough that you could take, say, pictures of hummingbirds or something of that sort. Set the camera up and hide behind a bush or something.
Sure. Well, it would be interesting to hear how that works. But that's the official word from USB.org, about 16 feet.
Well, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for the call. That's an interesting idea.
It really is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap it up there for this month. Peter, it's been great working with you here on the Afternoon Magazine, and I hope to do it on Focus.
Well, I'll look forward to it. I was trying to think the other day how many years it's been, and it's been years.
It has been.
Years.
It has been.
So.
Well, thank you so much for all the help that you've given our listeners over that time.
It's been my pleasure. It's always fun to come in and chat with you and chat with them and see what we can come up with.
Okay. So look for Computers and You coming to Focus, our morning telephone talk program in April or May. Peter Kimball has been our guest this afternoon. He's with the FAST 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn.